It's 4:40 in the morning, Wednesday, July 5th, and I'm going to try and make a little sense out of my health, and along the way, maybe offer you some advice to, in the event that you know people that are cursed with health problems and you don't know how to handle that. When I was 18 years old, I was first studying at university, and quite out of nowhere, I was just hit with a lot of really bad stuff. Incredible pain, cyclic pain. And as a consequence of it, anxiety, enormous depressions. That's never left me. That's been over 20 years now, and it's only the last few years that I'd had it told to me, that those enormous pains were cluster headaches. And enormous pains is maybe the simplest way to describe that. In these years, I've had four instances where I've essentially just broken down, a kind of exhaustion. That's derailed everything in my adult life to the point that really I look at it now. I could take about close to half of my adult life years and write them off completely. And then when you consider that in your adult life you're engaged in a process of building something, it's actually more than half, because your building things is ruined. I'm just into my fifth decade of living now, and really, apart from an amount of work that I do, which I'll come to the complications of later, I don't have anything to show for it. I've lost partners, I've been homeless, I've, you know, there aren't any wins. I've also been unfortunate enough domestically to have been raised, well, I say raised, to have raised myself within a very toxic environment. So you just, in the absence of anything else, you just try and drag yourself through it. There's a few occasions where I've failed to do that, but also sadly failed to do the job, and I'm still here. The last time that occurred was, I've rarely said it to anyone, but was last December in a hotel room in Liverpool, in England, where I overdosed, but didn't overdose enough. So, 7 months on, here I am. It's testing, and people around you aren't always helpful with it. If anyone knows you well enough to know that you're not stupid and to know you have some self-awareness, it surely must follow then that they must understand your life is just going down the drain with nothing to show for it. And you know that, there are personal ambitions and desires that you try and push towards, and you're hamstrung time and over. And that's one of many things that, from the outside, you need to have an appreciation of, and you need to act with those things in mind. There are some other things. I'm going to try and mention them piecemeal. We'll see how it goes. It might be a little fragmented. It's not rehearsed, so we'll see. I thought it'd be a good idea to give you three, say, golden rules for dealing with people that are compromised by their health. I mean, this has a mental health leaning, but I think it will apply to other things. Over the years, I've come to have ideas as to what health actually is, and there are some things that work across the board. The first thing is do not get sucked into that clicktivist apathy that is more or less all pervading these days. Sharing things about how important it is to let people talk and let people know it's okay to talk means nothing. And trust me, it's not even true. The world today is built so that people can talk like never before. It's not what's needed. People that are compromised in these ways know they can talk and they have plenty of platforms to talk. It makes no difference. They need to be listened to, and sometimes things need to be acted upon. Now, that's the bit where a lot of these people disappear, because there is a kind of under the surface. When someone says, yeah, please talk, please talk, please talk, the bit they're not saying is, but not to me. Not to me. It's really important that you talk. Obviously, you need to talk, but leave me out of it. I've done my bit by saying that you need to talk and sharing it with my friends. It means nothing. If you're not listening and if you're not acting, really just don't be involved. It's more harm than it's worth. Thing number two, don't confuse defense mechanisms with people being okay. I revert to a sense of humor a hell of a lot. I know you wouldn't think it listening to me on here, but I do. I joke a lot. There are people, even close within the family, I just can't speak to anymore because no matter how clear it is, they cannot understand that joking doesn't mean I'm okay and doesn't mean that my situation can be disregarded. You're joking in a, to a great extent, you're joking because things are the way they are and you need to get through the day. That's really obvious. And it's astonishing the extent to which people, maybe just to make their own lot easier, take your humour as a sign that you're okay, even when you're not. I've made it quite clear to people, look, if my health starts turning around, you will not hear the last of it. I'll be shouting from the rooftops. Until that time, your best assumption is that it isn't. Now, that doesn't mean that I won't joke. It doesn't mean that I won't be silly, but you have to understand that underneath that, those legs are still flapping at a million miles an hour. Really, really crucial to understand that. Because, I mean, it's the difference between, really, between life and death. It is that thing that can push you over the edge. Third, and quickly, trust me, the compulsion to not do damage to yourself can be close to a full-time job. Part of my, I don't know, cognitive payload in the day is partitioned permanently with a conscious effort to not do myself harm. And it's tiring. And it means you have to clear other things to make enough real estate for you to just try and get on with whatever you're doing. So even when it looks like you're not up to much, you're up to plenty. I have one family member who's terrible for that humour thing that I mentioned, to the point I just can't talk to them anymore. I have another family member which that whole thing's hanging by a thread anyway, they do something different, and they've been doing this now for, well, over a decade. Every single time I speak to them, they ask how I am, and I answer that honestly. And then I will give them a brief spiel of how things are. And they just say, oh, well, I didn't know that. And they do this every call. They just flat out deny any knowledge of the situation. Now, if you find yourself doing things to just put distance between yourself and the situation of someone like me, and I'm not talking about, everyone needs a break, everyone needs space for their own things. I mean, if you find yourself routinely doing that, you need to either stop or you need to just cut yourself completely out of the picture. Nobody wants to be defined by problems with their health. However, it can be quite significant. It can, it, you know, it can end up having a substantial colouring in of your life's picture. It needs to be acknowledged. And if you can't do that at all, then you're not doing any favours. Particularly if you're going so far as to just outright deny it and just act like it's not there. That's very frustrating for someone in a position where their health's compromised because there's only one person that actually occupies the body. I can have conversations with people, I can chew out this, that, and the other with people. But when that conversation finishes, they resume their life and I resume this. So it's incredibly important that in that time and space that those conversations take place, there's some sort of acknowledgement of what that personal space is. If you're having a conversation with someone and they're just flat out denying that you've even had that conversation with them, that's like genuinely maddening. Somebody in my situation will lose sleep questioning themselves over that. And just losing anything is not good in any situation, but particularly not in this. My relationship with loss is far more intimate than I would wish for it to be. You don't need more of it. I'm uncertain if that should be added to in any way. It's difficult because I've made a small deal with myself where this is concerned, what no matter what I'm talking about, to not name names and stuff like that, so I understand that I dance around things and there's vagaries here and there. But the general principle holds, just, either be involved or don't be involved at all. Don't try and paint a picture different to the one that's being given to you. Because believe me, the person on this side of the fence knows that picture. So that is always going to be your starting point. It can't be any other way. I've been asked sometimes to try and explain my situation and how it affects general life. And from experience, I try and put it this way. I look at life as everything within it splitting into one of three categories. there's the work category, there's the thing you have to do to keep yourself afloat in the world. There's, if you like, the hobby category, which is, did I say category then instead of category? I think I did, but either way, the hobby category, if you like, so just the things you do for your own enjoyment when you're not working. And then there's your personal relationship. In an ideal world for most people, they have a partner and they develop a life there. I know for me that's a particularly important thing. I've always been happier with someone, which makes my current circumstance really difficult because not only have I lost that in some lousy fashions, but over the last few years, I've been able to reevaluate things previous to that because up until a few years ago, I didn't know there was anything concretely wrong with me, you know, that had a name that I could point to and say, that's what that thing is. It was just like, you are an absolute nightmare. So that's difficult. I've slightly lost track of where I was before I was waylaid with that, so I'm gonna sip some tea. The high quality content that I'm sure you've come to expect if you listen to any of this. Yeah, so you have these three things. Now, my adult life is a case of pick two. Too much of your load is occupied by problems with your health to be able to do all three of those things. And I can point to every time in my life where I've done all three of those things and I've just ended up hospitalized, broken down. The last time that happened to me, within the space of half a year, I had lost my partner, my house, and about half my body weight. So it just doesn't happen. You've got to pick two. Now, I found something which unfortunately is a nightmare industry for other reasons, but I found a part of a very therapeutic work. So the decision I made was right, make your work your hobby. Unfortunately, it's also something that's nigh on impossible to make any headway in. But if I make my work my hobby, then I'm afforded space to have what I think is a decent right for people, the right to have a partner and to forge a personal life and be happy. There are other options. You could make your partner your job, which is kind of like being a pimp, which isn't really my style. You could make your partner your hobby, but then you'd just be a terrible partner because you would be clingy in the extreme. I've had occasions where I've done that previous to having got my head around this whole idea of three things pick two. You know, I've naturally fallen into that and I haven't quite seen why. But the one is undoubtedly make your work your hobby. And only that way can you create space enough to accommodate the other thing, should anyone ever be insane enough to want any part of that. But still, you need to try. Yeah, I think that's a really straightforward way of looking at it, and it makes it easy for you to make sense of like the fact that the compromise is a constant thing, as opposed to just something that pops up now and then. So I found a therapeutic quality to the work I do, which unfortunately is in the film industry. Where I find a great therapeutic help is in working with performers and directing them in a space and taking pages, turning them into the performances, essentially what you would call directing. I wish that I found therapeutic quality in something that was more tradesmanlike or everyday or mundane, because in many other respects, I'm not suited to the work that I do. I'm a very low-key person. I don't like attention. I don't like to shout and scream about what I'm doing. I just like to get my head down and concentrate on the work. And that's really not a fashionable way to be. I've often wondered about what it is with this work that seems to do me so much good. And I don't know. I have this feeling that it's almost related to some things that I've read about applications for virtual technology as anesthetic. I don't know if you've seen any of these things where people say you can almost displace consciousness slightly by way of creating these artificial environments. And I think there's an element of that. I think what happens is that I get so deep into like the shaping of this other little world that I detach from myself in the process of doing it, which provides me with some sort of respite. It's a break from the experience of occupying this body in a way. And I do wonder if there's something in that like really does make sense, because if I'm in a situation where I'm dealing with making a film, the actual, not the pre-production, and in latterly, because that's what I've been doing, the writing of the work, that's an absolute drag. I can well do without it. But when I'm actually dealing with the production, it has an enormous impact on my energy levels and my management of anything that does come my way. And I do wonder if there is something about this like necessary detachment when you have to immerse yourself into this other space with great intensity, that I just have never been able to find elsewhere. As a kid, actually, I always wanted to box, but I was too short-sighted to do that for a living, so there was no point. But I found something in that, even as a kid, that it's like if you know you have these gloves on, that you it requires this like utter focus, and the world shrinks down to this thing. And I suppose in a way you could say it of anything if you trained yourself, but I just haven't found it anywhere else. And maybe also the thing about the film process, because it's collaborative and because of the kind of person that I am, it fills a gap for like social needs as well, because it would be very difficult for me to have that otherwise. I'm not great amongst tons of people. But you put me on a set, I don't even think about that because it's contextualized in this other way where I know what I'm doing and I'm comfortable. And because I'm having to shape all this stuff that's outside of myself, I almost don't feel like I bring myself into the space. It's like I leave that guy at the door to have a rest, go and deal with this, and then come back and pick him up later. I don't know. I mean, that could all be nonsense, but I think there's maybe something in that. One of the big problems I have at the moment, obviously on top of all the usual, is related to drug laws. It's obviously important for me, work-wise, to be at a UK address. And I am for an amount of the year. But I'm also not for the rest of the year. I'm in mainland Europe now as I'm recording this. Because I've taken to microdosing psilocybin mushrooms, magic mushrooms, as a means to handle the pain that I have. And It's certainly much more successful than any other options that have ever been presented to me, namely oxygen or enormous doses of steroids. It's unusual. The pain is not any less. And I hate to sound, it's one of those problems with any sort of psychedelic experiences that it defies language. And I get quite tiresome of hippie-ish types even trying, but I understand the I understand the difficulty. The thing is, it doesn't diminish the pain any, but it does alter the personal relationship you have with that pain in a way that it makes it a little easier to handle. And under the circumstances, I will take that. Thank you very much. The problem I have, obviously, is that in the UK, that's a Class A drug. That's, it's serious business. You can't be dealing with that. So that is a, an enormous nuisance, because really, for working reasons, I could do with being there all the time. But for health reasons, I will have to, I will not have to, but choose to, cycle this medicine that I, I mean, you could, obviously, you can take mushrooms in the UK, but if you, it's frowned upon. I mean, it really is. I mean, that it's a Class A is absolutely ludicrous. If you ever want to go online and look at the drug classifications in the UK, the absolute hammering down on psychedelics compared to some of the stuff that's not on that li that's on the Class B list, even the Class C list, is appalling, particularly when it does make a difference to my health. Yeah, I'm not allowed to have it. Makes a difference to my health, completely naturally occurring, has never been found directly responsible for a fatality, is non-habit forming, yet you're looking at years upon years upon years for having anything to do with it. Yeah, that's very difficult, and it also it just makes life difficult, because if I'm not in one place, I'm in another. My life that has very little by way of foundation. I don't have anything. And it's even harder to build anything when you're shifted from pillar to post because of a law that you really do not see the sense in. Which I could defy, but like I say, it's not a petty thing, so it's a complication. I would say, though, with an advisory here and there, if you do have any problems with cluster headaches, with depression, with any sort of PTSD, anxiety, or anything like that, I would highly recommend the microdosing of mushrooms, to the point that I should probably make another little clip after this just to explain how I go about it, and so you don't go messing it up if you do. Microdosing then, dried mushrooms, something in the region of 0.2 of a gram, could go as high as 0.5, but 0.2 looks fairly well. Twice a week, I'd go Monday and Thursday. And the thinking is that you go on Monday with this small dose. It's what you call a sub-perceptual dose. You're not going to be tripping or anything like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that at all. But you'll be completely functional. I mean, my recommendation would always be the first couple of times you do it, don't have anything on the table that, that might endanger you in case you get it wrong. But really, at these sorts of levels, you don't have any big physical response. You certainly don't have to concern yourself with set and setting like you would with an actual trip, where your environment and who you're around and blah blah, that's all very important stuff for the experience. You're taking this like you would just take a pill. You take it on Monday morning on an empty stomach. Tuesday, Wednesday, it's working its way out of you. Thursday again. Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday's essentially a day off completely because it's gone and you come back on the Monday. You'd cycle that for anything between 4 to 8 weeks. And yeah, it's a very good thing. It's hard to explain the positive impact that it has. I mean, it's really something. I'd go so far as to say, even if somebody didn't have any major issues that needed any attention, just in general life, it would probably offer you a boost. It would probably make you a better version of you. But in my case, it allows for a more philosophical response to pain to such an extent that that pain can be more manageable actually in the moment. It's more than just making it easier to get over. It does make it a little easier in the moment. It's not a cure-all by any means, but you will take whatever you can get, and it's several orders of magnitude beyond what you would be prescribed in the UK within the medical setup anywhere. That setup that makes this thing a Class A drug, there you go. Hugely, hugely recommended. And if this is important to you, you can Google it. There's a lot of studies. I think the most recent one might have been the University of São Paulo, really showing that this has like pronounced positive effects on dealing with PTSD, anxiety, depression, cluster headaches, blah blah blah. So if you are that person who needs an endorsement from a ton of people with a load of letters after their name, and that's perfectly wise to do that, then do Google it. It is there. There's peer-reviewed stuff. There's all these stuff in journals that these guys do. You're not just doing it on a whim from some guy that said it was useful for him. It's slowly in some parts of the world actually gaining some traction as something that's maybe too important to be shoved into a corner when it could be doing a lot of good for a lot of people. So do have a look. It's important stuff. Very important stuff, actually. I'd like to think that during my lifetime it becomes much more prominent in daily living.